The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Timothy Shea and Brian McClain on today's News Talk, TNT.
Welcome to State of the Nation on today's News Talk. I'm Timothy Shea. With me is Brian McClain. We are live from Central New York and Central Texas. Visit us on the web at tntradio.live. Francis Scott Key Bridge along I-95 in Maryland collapsed early this morning into the Baltimore Harbor following a ship strike to one of the support pylons, setting off a search and rescue mission for those who plunged into the icy waters. A live stream of the bridge at about 1:30 a.m. showed a cargo ship colliding with the support pylon, causing the bridge to break apart and fall into the Patapsco River. Multiple vehicles were on the bridge at the time, as were work crews, but no update on casualties has been offered. Brian, this is not only an horrific story from the human toll, but this cripples the East Coast economically for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Timothy, because I've been looking into, some of the more mechanical aspects and some of the game theory going on. How does this affect the town, the city?
Well, it affects the city because of all the commuters that use the Key Bridge. Okay, so getting to work now is going to be a massive hassle. The traffic, already bad, is going to be horrific. But this Key Bridge was used to transport hazardous materials, liquid natural gas, gasoline, it's nitrogen, etc., through the city, because they can't go through, for obvious reasons, the tunnel. They can't go through the tunnel, so they use the Key Bridge. Now they're going to have to reroute around the city on the Beltway in Baltimore, which is just going to add extra delays. But so materials will still be able to bypass Baltimore. But this is going to be a long process, because think about it. First, we have to clear the bridge wreckage off the ship, right? And then we have to be doing the investigation. National Transportation Safety Board is going to be doing the investigation. And then we have to have the complete demolition of the bridge, and then the design phase and the approval phase, and then the environmental approval phase. And then we get to get a new bridge built in maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and I also noticed that the Biden administration is already talking about having a congressional act to start funding this. And this was a foreign ship. This is a ship out of Singapore. And this ship has been flagged in the past for safety violations. So, can we take a moment? I mean, would I be wrong to ask, can we as a nation take a moment here and look at responsibility, look at the forensics, look at what happened, see if maybe something needs to be compensated from this company?
Well, I think that's exactly what needs to happen. Of course, all ships are foreign flagged, right? There are no container ships flagged in the United States for tax reasons. But you're supposed to have a harbor pilot. Was there a harbor pilot? One thing I noticed, Brian, in the video is that the lights went out on the ship. It looks as though the ship lost electrical power. And then when the power came back on, the ship steered right into the pylon. So was this a cyber attack? We know that these ships are controlled by GPS. Was this a cyber attack? And the ships, the lights going out were part of the hard reboot to get the virus into the navigation system that would steer it directly into the pylon, because it hit bow first.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really curious. If you watch the video, you'll see the power go off and then you'll see it come back on and go off again. And there's also a giant black plume of smoke coming from the stack, indicating that something may have happened in the engine room or something like that.
Either a fire in the engine room, or a friend of mine who's a cruise ship captain said it could have been they were throwing the propellers into reverse, trying to slow it down. Something indeed happened aboard that ship. We need to find out what it was. And quite frankly, I'm not confident that Booty Plug or any of his underlings can handle that. I want to see the Department of Homeland Security investigating this.
Yeah, Pete Booty Plug, as you refer to him, he has not done great. I mean, we've seen his performance, if you will, in East Palestine, and it was pretty poor.
Well, planes, trains, automobiles, and now ships, okay? There hasn't been a single transportation sector that has succeeded under Pete Buttigieg, and it's just par for the course for this administration. Which brings us to our next story. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced today that Nicole Shanahan, the former wife of Sergey Brin and reputed lover, although they both denied it, of Elon Musk, to be his vice presidential pick. What do you make of this, Hesher?
Well, I wrote a list of pros and cons, and I gotta say, my cons list was very long and my pros list was very short.
Well, I understand that sentiment, but I think this is strategic. I think that Bobby is trying to take votes away from Joe Biden because Ms. Shanahan is very much against the Dobbs decision. And we know that Joe's going to be making abortion a central issue in this campaign. We know that she's big on all the other issues. She is in alignment with Bobby and the rest of us on the gene jabs. But other than that, she is a hard, hard, hard left radical. And I think that he's trying to take votes away from Joe Biden and give them to Donald Trump in the hopes that he can get rid of the Clinton-Obama cabal that has taken over his family's party.
Maybe there is some sort of 4D aspect there, but let me just remind you, for all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, all you got to do is visit our What's on Events calendar on the TNT website at tntradio.live and stay in touch on today's news talk, TNT.
The facts, no spin or agenda.
Not enough with the lies, we need the facts.
This is today's news talk radio, TNT.
So yeah, Timothy, I don't know. I like the idea of that. It's a little, I have some 4D chess fatigue though. I got to say, I've got 4D chess fatigue.
Well, I understand this. I understand that. I think we all do, right? But I've been around politics long enough to know some shenanigans when I see them. And this reeks of shenanigans to me.
Well, this is going to drive away a lot of Trump voters, too. This is going to drive away a lot of centrists. This is going to drive away a lot of people. This woman previously donated to Democratic campaigns. She holds the title of billionaire tech entrepreneur and philanthropist, which to many Americans now is code for demon. She has dodgy connections to China while in law school. Shanahan also spent time abroad studying intellectual property and Chinese law in Singapore. She was married to Google co-founder Sergey Brin, who she shares a daughter with. I mean, my list goes on and on and on and on here. I looked into a little bit of her companies as well. If you go to her company's website, it's just like, you know, sustainability, all this stuff, social justice.
It's all
justice.
BS. It's all
of it. Yeah, it's all the stuff. So if she's a sacrificial lamb by RFK to siphon votes, you know, and to some further ends in a Trump future, I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised at this point. Nothing would surprise me, Timothy, but I don't like the whiff of it. I've been looking at her track record all day, and I am quite displeased with it.
Oh, well, I don't like her as a pick. I would never want her as vice president, of course, but I think if I'm right on this, and we'll know I'm right if Donald Trump names Bobby to be attorney general or to be chairman of the FDA or something important in the administration. It only makes sense. This only makes sense if that's what he's doing. Because otherwise, if he was trying to defeat or draw away from Donald Trump, he would have picked somebody like, I don't know, Lisa Murkowski or one of these representatives that is leaving Congress early to give Democrats a majority in the House before the election. So
yeah.
That's why I think there's some shenanigans going on. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that he's doing this because he's a Donald Trump fan. I think that he sees a Trump presidency as an inevitability, and he wants to rescue the Democrat Party to pull it back from the abyss, which is what I said after we heard him in Memphis last year. He's the only Democrat on the horizon that can pull that party back from the progressive abyss into which it's hurled itself.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know what that would look like. I'm trying to imagine a future Donald Trump presidency here in the near future with RFK Jr. as, you know, let's just say FDA. Is he going to be appointing this woman to some sort of, you know, lead position within the FDA? Because she's keen on Neuralink. She's keen on, you know, she's, her comments are interesting when it comes to the vax issue. She says she's been researching autism because her daughter is autistic. So, you know, she's got a, I just hope that she and RFK share similar skepticism of standard vaccines the same way they do of mRNA shots.
Well, we know that Bobby does at least.
Yeah. Yeah. Her, I'm a little unsure of, though. The way she donates is, it almost feels like the way that she donates money is meant to throw us off. Or, you know, maybe I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. I'm just learning about her today, pretty much. Or, and maybe I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. Maybe she's been on a journey. You know, many, many people go on a journey of evolution of thought, especially when they have a child that's affected by this. But I don't know, man, because she's already pointing towards Neuralink as a potential solution for her child's autism. And to me, that's a little pie.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. If there is a plan, I don't think she's in on the plan. I think that she is the tool that's being used. Okay. I think this is Bobby's strategy, not her strategy.
Yeah, well, if it is indeed that forward thinking, it's a shrewd strategy, of course, and it's causing waves. I mean, I saw that break and immediately, like, Politico articles start popping up. You know what I mean? The PR machine was there and ready to go this morning as soon as that speech happened in Oakland, California. And, you know, pulling her from Oakland, California, another interesting choice.
Well, yeah, that's another big red flag, right? Mm-hmm. One of the safest and across the bay from one of the cleanest cities in America.
Yeah, and she's donated millions to the restorative justice. You know, she put a whole bunch of campaign money in on that California bill that was, you know, looking to defund police and give money to mental health experts. Yeah. And I mean, just basically every red flag that a conservative could have or an technocrat could have, she's wearing on her sleeve.
Absolutely. As I said, all the BS. She's all in on all the BS.
Yes, all the things. She was very upset about the Roe v. Wade thing. That's the other interesting thing about her. She's got this really big aspect of her that is pushing towards what she's calling you know, women's health, which is interesting. I don't know if she's a biologist, not sure if she's qualified to decide what a woman is, but at any rate, we'll set that aside. She's very interested in changing female reproductive health or improving it. She's put a lot of money, a lot of effort, a lot of time into that. So those efforts will certainly be interesting to look at as this story unfolds.
Yeah, you know, it always takes me back to that classic Bugs Bunny episode. Remember Kill the Wabbit?
Yes.
I always hear, you know, this is their theme song, Kill the Babies, Kill the Babies. That's, you know, it's become their sacrament, abortion, and it's absolutely disgusting, revolting, and it shows just where that party's moral center originates.
Well, that was another thing that kind of had me a little bit like, what is RFK doing here? Because you can kind of tell from the way that you know, this is being highlighted in all of her bios right now today as they come out. You can kind of tell that this is going to turn into one of his campaign platform issues, you know, and I kind of preferred the RFK that we were seeing, you know, up until the last few months. And if, you know, that's just sort of a milquetoast political platform right now, even in the wake of Roe overturning. I think he should be aiming a little bit higher than that for platform pieces, but we're going to dumb it down for the Biden and Trump audiences, I guess.
Well, that's going to take some effort, right?
Yes, at least on one of those sides.
You know, there was a guy in Washington named the Grease Man, radio host in the morning. And the grease man was this buffoon who his tagline was, "Oh, that's nice." Right. He'd talk about a good looking girl and he'd go, "Oh, that's nice." And then he went out, did an ad. It was a TV ad for the show. And he had his wife, who was this gorgeous woman, dressed up in a bikini. And he's there like a Hawaiian shirt. And it was just a total like bimbo gawk. And he looks over and he goes, "Oh, that's nice." Well, it turns out that they both went to Yale College. They were both Ivy Leaguers. And I laughed and I said, "You know, you got to be awfully smart to play that dumb." And just like with Lisa Kudrow in Friends, right? Phoebe was the dumb blonde, right? Lisa Kudrow is a biologist in real life. You got to be smart to play that dumb. Brian, I don't know if we're smart enough, as smart as we are. I don't know if we're smart enough to be able to dumb it down to the level of the average Biden voter. I just don't know if we can do it.
Yeah, that's a challenge right there. I don't think we can. I really can't even pretend it.
You know, explain it to me like I'm a 2-year-old, right? That's all they're about now is throwing toddler temper tantrums when they don't get their way.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, the blue hairs, it will be interesting if Trump is elected, or as some might say, selected. It will be interesting to see the liberal tiers. We're kind of still resting on the collages of 2015 and 16. So if that does happen, it will make some glorious liberal tears to drink for sure.
It's always a beautiful thing.
All right. Let's just take a break here on State of the Nation with today's News Talk TNT.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us. And the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on 3 separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on 3 occasions, Tedros's answer was, "We didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera." That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. But the danger to animals the world over is growing, and the need for your help has never been more urgent. On land, you'll help stop poachers from threatening and killing elephants and big cats for the illegal wildlife trade. In the oceans, you'll help rescue dolphins, whales, and seals from deadly hazards. And you'll help rescue, rehabilitate, and release vulnerable animals when disasters strike. Here at home and around the world, we can't do this work without you. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Internet.
A stream online.
TNTradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
A group of medical professionals and women's health experts, including Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, will be speaking in defense of women in front of the U.S. Supreme Court today. The court will hear oral arguments in U.S. Food and Drug Administration versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. The case involves the FDA's challenge of a lower court ruling that it must reinstate its own guidelines placed on the chemical abortion drug mifepristone, when the agency first approved the drug in 2000. Since then, the FDA has rolled back several of these safeguards, such as the requirement for in-person dispensation of the drug by the prescriber, which has opened the door for dangerous mail-order abortions with no medical supervision. Joining us now to help us learn more about this important case is Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries Executive Director, Katie Talento. Katie, welcome to State of the Nation. Thank you for joining us. So tell us a little bit about how this case got started and how important it is.
Yeah, it's a really important case. There was oral argument today at the Supreme Court. We had a big rally. There were lots of pro-abortion protesters as well. But yeah, what the case is at the end of the Clinton administration, when they were leaving, you know, leaving the building, they approved this new abortion pill. Prior to that, you could only get a surgical abortion, and this pill was allowed. And it's actually a combination pill. But they put a bunch of really important safeguards onto that approval, including that you have to visit a doctor before you get the drug, when you take the first pill, and then you have to come back in a couple of days to make sure that you're not bleeding out and that you're not having a dangerous infection. Because of course, the results of this drug are excessive hemorrhage and abdominal cramping, and women are often bleeding on their bathroom floors and in massive pain by design. That's not even considered an adverse event because that's the point of the drug. And so it's really hard to tell the difference between that and an emergency hemorrhage. And so the FDA, in its wisdom, said, you know, you have to have a doctor involved in this process. They have to see you in person twice. And so that was an important safeguard for women's health. Well, at the end of the Obama administration, as they were leaving the building, they took one of those visits off, the second visit. So now you could go to a Planned Parenthood, get your pills in a little baggie, and you'd leave and do this abortion at home. But at least you had one physician visit in person beforehand to make sure that the baby wasn't too big and it wasn't too old at that point, or else this wouldn't work. And also to make sure that it wasn't lodged in the fallopian tube, an ectopic pregnancy, which could cause serious problems for the mother. And so those important safeguards were still left in place. Well, after COVID and after the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade, this FDA, the Biden FDA, took that visit off, that one visit that was remaining, took it off. So now you can just have a telemedicine visit, and then they will mail your abortion pills through the mail. This creates problems for pro-life states where they have outlawed chemical or surgical abortions, so that, you know, you can have a telemedicine visit with a nurse practitioner from a Planned Parenthood in California, and they'll ship medicine illegally into Texas for you. And you will have that abortion. You'll administer it to yourself all by yourself.
Goodness gracious. I'm in Texas, and I know a lot of parents here are sitting back in their chair right now, reeling from hearing this. But so they did this under the auspices of COVID. They did this under, oh, you have to have the ability to do this because, you know, we don't necessarily want you going to the doctor right now. You might kill grandma if you breathe on her wrong.
That was the excuse they gave, yes, but it was done right after the Dobbs decision. So it was really kind of a stick in the eye to the pro-life states that were now reverting to their state laws, outlawing abortion for the first time they were allowed to do that. And so they wanted to just stick it to those states like Texas and find a way to help those women kill their babies in those states that maybe it would be too hard for them from now on to kill their children. So it's a big problem. Go ahead.
No, it is it's a huge problem, and it's almost as if women's health care has nothing to do with health care whatsoever. I mean, how, in what possible universe is this good for women's health?
It's not. In fact, if you read the FDA label for this drug, mifepristone, what you will see is the clinical trial data show that up to 1 in 25 women who take this drug will end up in the emergency room. And 1 in 33 women, it won't even work for, and they'll have to go get a surgery to complete the abortion. So this is not good for women. You know, we heard today outside of the Supreme Court, we heard from women who had taken these pills and it had incredibly tragic, horrific experiences, bleeding and suffering for days, such that they were traumatized and couldn't even go in that bathroom ever again. They saw their little baby that they, you know, pushed out of their bodies during that experience, and they, you know, bloody at the bottom of their showers. It was horrific. And that is normal. The FDA label says that's to be expected. That's by design.
Goodness gracious. Has this drug killed anybody?
Yes, of course, there have been deaths from this. Of course, the FDA doesn't really want to report those very well. We have had a really hard time getting that data out of them. The pharmaceutical manufacturers are required to provide this data to the FDA if it happens, if it's reported to them. But first of all, a Planned Parenthood isn't going to report it. Most of the women won't report it. There's so much shame and stigma and secrecy involved in this because everybody knows it's wrong. Everybody is heartbroken in the whole process. And so, you know, no one wants to talk about this, but it's terrible for women. And it's just one long example of many, many examples of the FDA just declaring a war on women and babies. This is only one in many examples.
Yeah, and it's killed some mothers, but it's killed every single baby. And we could tell where the American Medical Association was headed when it removed the provision from the Hippocratic Oath that doctors say when they are graduated not to provide an abortive fashion. When they took that out of the Hippocratic Oath, this was the inevitability.
Yeah, this is a groupthink cult, which is these, you know, pro-abortion. It's a religion, and, you know, they can't swear oaths to actually protect and save lives when they're out to kill lives and to take these little babies off the planet. So I think that we have to really think about, you know, the women that are going to be harmed by this, especially now that it's so easy to get, that we're seeing stories, just one last week out of Seattle, of men, babies, fathers that are getting these pills and are forcing them onto their mothers, onto the mothers of their children. So we saw one example where a boyfriend actually shoved these pills up his girlfriend. We have another one where they're putting them in drinks. It's really scary because it's so easy to get now. And, you know, you don't have to administer the drug in the presence of a physician who would protect a woman from obviously that kind of situation.
Wow. Wow. That is shocking and a really horrific side effect that I have a hard time believing no one thought of. It's hard to believe that no one thought that that could be the sort of thing that might happen when you open the floodgates to this, something like this. Now, we're going to take a brief headline here. And when we come back, we'll pick up right there, talk a little bit more about the case and where you think it's headed right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk TNT.
Now.
News.
Big news.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov emphasized the critical importance of addressing Russia's demographic challenges, highlighting that improving the demographic situation and boosting sustainable growth and birth rates are crucial for the nation's survival. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has decided not to send a previously expected delegation to Washington, following the United States' abstention from vetoing a UN Security Council resolution that calls for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in Gaza.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Now, Kate, before we go back into some of our questions about the case itself, I'm curious, you know, we've been tracking the absolutely horrendous fentanyl and trank dope problems we're having in this country. And one of the things that we've tracked specifically when it comes to young people accidentally dying over this stuff is that many of them are purchasing what they think are pharmaceutical drugs on, you know, your Snapchats, your Instagrams, whatever, you know, black market things that look and appear real, but really they're counterfeit drugs that, you know, are quite often laced with fentanyl. Are there counterfeit versions of these drugs going around also at the same time as the FDA is basically just legalizing this similar process?
I mean, at this point, we don't know. No one has visibility into the amount of telemedicine commerce that is going on in this space. It's still pretty new. So I suspect that could happen, but it's so cheap at this point. I mean, it's not like it's super expensive. So I don't know if there's a huge market for counterfeit pills, but we'll see.
Yeah, so the government and the FDA are basically giving it away for free. You know, and many Americans think that's a eugenics program. Let's just be frank. You know, when we look at the history of Planned Parenthood, which a lot of Americans have at this point, they feel like, you know, yeah, it's just like COVID shots. It's safe and effective. Well, yeah, it's effective if the outcome, you know, that horrible, tragic, sad outcome that you described is exactly the effect that they're looking for.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, the FDA has a long storied history of, especially in recent years, of, you know, protecting Big Pharma from us instead of protecting us from Big Pharma. And, you know, you have to wonder, is it just that they're captured, that they're regulatory captured, or is it just that they want their big, like, Amazon, telemedicine, Amazon of abortion? Which is it? Or is it both? Because it can't be that they're for women's rights or women's health here, because, you know, this is the same FDA that told us 20 years ago that they had to put these safeguards in. They had to, you see. And we believed them. I mean, I agreed with those safeguards. And so what has the science showed us that's different, that's changed in those 20 years? There's nothing different about the pills. There's nothing that's changed in terms of clinical trials that would warrant a scientific change in direction so that we no longer need these protections. It's pure political ideology and pure selling out to their Big Pharma paymasters.
Yeah, I would definitely argue that it's both. It's both that the regulatory captured and want the massive telemarketing sales of this drug. And you're exactly correct. The science hasn't changed. In fact, the clinical history over the last 20 years indicates that the safeguards are absolutely necessary. That second doctor visit, the first doctor visit's important so that the woman gets proper instructions, but it's the second doctor visit to make sure that she's okay that's the most critical. And if they were really interested in women's health, they would mandate at least the second doctor visit.
Well, that's right. And it's the second doctor visit that they took off, that Obama took off in 2016. And it's right. The first doctor visit that they've now taken off so that they can have this telemedicine business. So
exactly. It's really, and they're going to chalk these up to, they're just going to chalk these up to miscarriages. It's another miscarriage. That's why we're never going to get accurate data on this at all.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen that this FDA is not particularly adept at collecting adverse information, adverse events information. I mean, I think they sued in order to keep from showing COVID vaccine adverse event information. They wanted to, you know, spill it out over 75 years, they would promise us. You know, they had to be sued just to get that even. So, you know, they're not going to come out and tell us the truth. It's clear that the scientists have been corrupted over there. It's a craven agency. It gets more than half of its budget from the pharmaceutical industry. And this is all by design, and it's all approved by Congress, this entire agency's operations and budget. So, you know, we really need to think about, what are we doing here? The FDA needs to be totally rebuilt from the ground up. And, you know, the CDC may be burned to the ground. I don't know.
Yes.
But we need a functioning FDA. And so we really need one. And these pharmaceutical companies are getting more craven every year. And then, of course, you have the ideology of the abortion industry on top of that.
Well, that brings us back to the case. What do you expect is going to happen? Do you think the Supreme Court is they surprise me sometimes. I'm just shocked sometimes at what's coming out of the Supreme Court, sometimes in a good way, sometimes in a whiskey tango foxtrot sort of way.
Well, they had several questions in front of them. The first one was whether these doctors even have standing to sue the FDA. And the second one had to do with whether the regulation would protect women's health, you know, in consistency with the FDA's mission. Unfortunately, the justices spent the majority of the time questioning the arguing attorneys about the standing issue and whether doctors really have standing to sue, and what about doctors who and their conscience rights to not participate in abortion, and, you know, a lot of side issues that I don't think are the real issues. And they spent, you know, 80% of their time on that. Not enough airtime was given to just the horrific safety problems here. And so I think it was kind of a win. It was a good day for the FDA in terms of not having to be accountable for their behavior. So I don't know. I'm hearing rumors that, you know, there may be five or more votes to bounce the case on standing. So I'm nervous that it maybe didn't go as well as we'd hoped. But you're right. Sometimes the court can really surprise us, and they are keeping their true feelings that they've already decided and don't have questions about in, you know, on the inside until the ruling comes out.
Right, right. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see. When will we hear? When do we expect a decision?
So if you do oral arguments in March, you usually get the rulings in June or early July sometimes, but usually late June.
All right. What do you think, Timothy? Are they going to, how do you think they're going to fall on this? You've got a pretty good set of tea reading eyes for the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, standing has been an issue in questioning this term. They've focused not just in this case, but in a lot of cases on the standing issue. And I think Katie's right that there might be enough votes there to kick the can because, look, like it or not, the court's a political entity itself, and it's dedicated to its own preservation. And it knows that if it hands down too many controversial decisions, it's going to lose its credibility. So the best way to avoid losing your credibility is to avoid ruling on a controversial issue. So if they can kick it on standing, I'm afraid they will.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that to the justices, if they were watching, that, you know, all we're asking for is to go back to at least the Obama era regulation and preferably the Clinton era regulation. We're not asking to, although I'd like to, but that's not what this case is asking, to eliminate access to this abortion drug altogether. Just the reasonable safeguards that are 20 years old that the FDA used to believe in.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we may have another problem of birthing males thinking they need to take these things too. So you could end up hurting both women and men in the current society in America. Go figure. Can't believe we have to close on that note there. But you can keep up at ahcsm.org. Katie, anywhere else you want to point people to, want to keep up with you and keep up with this story?
Yeah, so the best place to keep up with the story is at the Alliance Defending Freedom website, which is adflegal.org. I'm with the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, and we're following this very closely, and you gave our website ahcsm.org.
All right. Well, Katie, thank you so much for everything that you're doing. I know a lot of people watching this right now want to thank you. So get on over to the website. You can leave messages over there. Get in contact. Send this to your local representatives. It's an important one. All right, Katie, thank you so much for joining us on State of the Nation at today's News Talk, TNT.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go.
I
didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Meet Norm. He lives with anxiety, but with the help of this latest innovation from Be Normal, he can be normal, just like everyone else. With the swipe of a finger, you can project happiness, confidence, machismo. Why settle for being real when you can be normal? The Normal Maker, new from Be Normal.
This item doesn't really work because there's no such thing as normal. We're all different. What we like, how our brains work. In fact, 1 in 5 of us live with mental illness. Don't filter who you are. Start by talking to someone you trust. And remember, there is no normal.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
Joining us now for an update on the invasion of these United States being sponsored and funded by the Biden administration is the 24th Chief of the United States Border Patrol, Rodney Scott. Rodney, welcome back to State of the Nation.
Thank you for having me on again. Appreciate it. Wish it was a better story to tell today.
Yeah. Unfortunately, every day seems to be getting worse than the day before, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. The numbers fluctuate up and down. That's just how it is. But overall, the crisis continues, and we're seeing some significant increases in Chinese smuggling out in San Diego, not just asylum seekers, but actually you know, smuggling, trying to hide from people, which indicates more. And there's just underlying stories in these massive numbers like that all across the southwest border and the northern border.
Where's the worst sector right now? Where do you have the most people coming over?
So Tucson sector, but pretty much the state of Arizona, is getting hit hard. Texas has been the high point for quite a while, but the Governor Abbott, his efforts and messaging are really paying off. I mean, we saw that clash in El Paso this last week. I think you guys did, where a bunch of migrants tried to rush National Guard. That's the frustration, because Texas is actually doing what the federal government should be doing, and they're trying to actually deter crime. Think of that crazy idea, right? But unfortunately, Arizona, New Mexico, and California all have governors that lean left now and that refuse to actually try to, you know, fill in the gap for the federal government. So the cartels have shifted a lot of the smuggling to basically New Mexico, Arizona, and California. But if you look at the numbers online, it looks a little misleading, because all of the state of New Mexico pretty much is reported as El Paso sector for Border Patrol. So it makes it look like it's Texas, but it's actually New Mexico.
Well, the Democrats have been working toward a dumber electorate for decades now. That's why the schools stopped teaching critical thinking skills back in the 1970s. It's why they stopped teaching logic and other skills, reading comprehension, et cetera, because they want a stupid electorate that's more easily controlled, and training people to think with their feels instead of their brains. And this is what you get. If you think that allowing people into the country is necessary because we need to take care of these people, you end up with a situation like this. And it's not just on this issue, it's every issue. We just talked about abortion, how they've gotten people to think that women's health care means killing your baby and putting yourself, your own health at risk. It's issue after issue. This isn't really a government problem. This is a Democrat problem, isn't it? And I know you've served under both Democrat and Republican leaders, but I think that this right now is an active component of the Democrats' political strategy.
So I'm not going to argue with any of that. I will remind everybody listening, though, if you back up in time, this was not a political issue, not to this level anyway.
Right.
The first president that took serious action on the southwest border to start building border wall and hiring more Border Patrol agents was Bill Clinton. The current leftists, if you will, or the current Democrats, and I worked in the Biden administration, so again, I'm not being partisan, I'm just being factual, have completely lost their mind, and they walked away from border security 100%. The Republicans in the House on day one, they actually campaigned on it, and then they kept their promises on day one. And everybody remembers, I like to highlight, the Secretary of Department of Homeland Security, shortly after he was put in position, went on all the Sunday talk shows, and he made a statement that still rings true to today. We have a plan, we're acting on our plan, and our plan will be successful. He didn't give any specifics, but I think today we are seeing the results of that plan, because they have not done one thing to slow down illegal cross-border migration, which they know actually allows the cartel, the Mexican cartels, to pick and choose anything that comes into this country, because they basically overwhelmed the law enforcement. So it really is a Democrat problem. The House actually passed a very strong border security bill. Every Republican voted on it. Not a single Democrat voted for it. And no one's talking about that. They keep wanting to talk about the Senate bill and some of these other things that had very little support. But that HR 2, that House bill that was passed by the Republicans, would have solved the problems we're having today.
Yeah, you know, and they're not only are they not doing anything to stop it, they're openly facilitating it. You know, we just saw the reports a week or two ago about the 320,000 individuals that were picked up and flown into the country. And you know, there's now greater attention on all ports of entry rather than sections of border fence, you know, and as we start to sort of zoom out a little bit on the country. If you zoom out from the southern border, you see it on beaches, at, you know, Zodiac boats pulling up on beaches, every, you know, airlines packed with people without passports and IDs. I mean, imagine that after everything we go through to get on an airplane. I think the scope is much bigger than many Americans realized at the beginning, but now people are starting to see this.
I hope they are. I honestly do. So So let's talk about the 320,000 that have been paroled into the United States. First and foremost, that undercuts the refugee program. If you're outside the United States trying to come into the U.S. for whatever reasons, that's without any legal right otherwise, that's traditionally been considered a refugee. And we have a formal program that has caps on that. This administration is literally violating the law once again. They created this, I think it's an illegal parole program, where they use this app to schedule appointments in the U.S. that allows people to board planes and fly here. So that 320,000, it's only people that have been known in advance. They've been paroled in. They're flying to airports inside the U.S. But here's what most Americans also don't understand. It takes about 90 minutes each to process them. So that means that that CBP officer that should be clearing international flights of people legally allowed to come here is pulled off the line and doing this stuff. Instead of inspecting shipping containers or cars or any of the things we're paying them to do, they're taken offline. And if you do the numbers, it equates to about 500 CBP officers being removed from enforcement duties a year based on the increase that Biden has pushed into the ports of entry, knowingly and intentionally.
And again, this isn't a bug. This is a feature for them. As you said, Secretary Mayorkas said they have a plan. And people assumed that the plan meant that they were going to solve the border problem. And so, well, no, they don't see it as a problem. They see this as to their political advantage. It's almost like the old Twilight Zone episode, right? When the aliens come down and they give everyone peace and everyone's well fed and the book is to serve man. And the twist at the end is that it's a cookbook.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, I think the only problem the Biden administration really sees now, and again, please remember, I was in the room talking to these people face to face, is the optics. So yeah. They basically erased the U.S. border. They're allowing people from around the world, over 181 different nations last year, pour across this border, pretty much completely unvetted. And they could stop it at any point in time. All Biden would have to do is actually take the same pen he used to write all the executive orders, killing every effective program we had, use that same pen and put those programs back in place. That would wipe out about 80% of this with no congressional action needed whatsoever. He won't do it. Why? Because this is part of their plan. The optics are now biting them because even the middle of the road, just anybody actually with functioning brain cells, they're looking left and right and going, hey, this is not sustainable. You know, how are we importing all these people to Chicago and kicking kids off of playgrounds and out of recreation centers, funding all that, and then not even taking care of our own homeless? This is really starting to wake some people up. That's the only thing the Democrats are freaking out about. They don't really care about. They want these people pouring across for whatever reason.
Well, let's look at the international aspect here. You know, we had Michael Yon on the show last week, and he's been doing a very detailed job. He was on the Sean Ryan show recently, also did an extended interview there, and he's doing a very good job of reporting which NGOs are involved with this. And we've got international, multinational, taxpayer money funded, probably in some cases, NGOs that are moving people around and facilitating all this through multiple borders, multiple countries. There was a gentleman that was on the terror watch list, last name of Ibadi. Mr. Ibadi was picked up in El Paso, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, it's just like, okay, this is a guy who was on the terror watch list. Somehow he goes from, I don't know, somewhere in the Middle East, like Turkey, to Sweden, and then Ecuador, and then Panama, and then the United States. How does someone go through that many borders while getting, you know, NGO money, perhaps, in some cases, and not get flagged until they get to El Paso, Texas?
It's all about the numbers. So first and foremost, people, they look at how we do things in the United States and then just assume that's what's going on around the world. But many of these other countries don't even have the technology. They could be talking to somebody face to face, but unless you scan their prints, run them in a system, and that system actually has to be connected to something bigger, a bigger database, you're not going to know who's in front of you. And even here in the U.S., people they give too much credit to the national watch list and our NCIC, our criminal databases. Those are only what we know, but there's like billions of people last time I checked in this world, and we haven't encountered a lot of them. We don't know what their intent is. And don't ever forget either, these people are paying smugglers, whether it be NGOs or whether it be cartel, they're paying people that are really good at getting them from point A to point B without being stopped, you know, through bribery or whatever else. And I do want to point out, if that Senate bill that crashed and burned, thank God, that had $1.4 billion more dollars, which means they spent, it was a supplemental, they spent the money they had already, going specifically to NGOs once the illegal aliens are actually inside the U.S. to fly them around the U.S. to take care of them. And DHS has intentionally, I believe intentionally, not put any reporting requirements on those NGOs as to where those people are flown. It's like laundering
your money. Exactly, because, yeah, it's because they're flying them into areas where they think they can get a permanent Democrat majority, just as they've turned Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Dearborn, Michigan into permanent Muslim majorities. That was part of Obama's plan. He flew Muslims into all 50 states, and that's what they're doing now. They're flying what they think are going to be Democrats into all 50 states. But the best laid plans of mice and men. You said that the Biden administration is worried only about the optics. It's a good worry because Blacks and Hispanics are now coming out overwhelmingly for Donald Trump. And it's the first time that we've really seen that.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Mark Morgan, talks all the time about the left is really good at hijacking people's emotions, even our emotions. But once people start seeing the reality, look at Martha's Vineyard. Those people loved illegal aliens right until their neighborhoods had not even very many, and they freaked out. Look at New York. You know, it's easy to say I'm a sanctuary city and act like you have this level of compassion until you think about or experience, in their case, the second and third level effects. It's fake compassion, by the way, anyway. This open borders is killing people left and right. It's hurting hundreds of thousands of people, either through human trafficking or just basically the violence that happens on their way up here. And where do people go once they come into the U.S. illegally? They go to the most underserved communities within the United States. It's not the Home and Garden magazine, you know, that the people think it is. It's just an open border is not good for anybody. It's horrible for everybody. It's just amazing it's taken this long for some of the people in the middle to see it.
Yeah. Rodney, are you concerned about what's going on in Haiti right now? I was watching an interview with a gentleman that runs a orphanage in Haiti. And he had a harrowing escape from Haiti this week. And he pointed out that, oddly enough, I just caught this as a side note in an interview with him about what happened. I haven't seen a lot of news about this, but he pointed out that the gang activity got really bad where he was, and that the gangs took over a prison and released over 1,000 violent criminals. Are you concerned about that effect, you know, as we're starting to see, you know, plans to have, you know, medium stations in Guantanamo and other places to bring Haitians here?
Yeah, very much so. Anytime there's been civil unrest like that in Haiti, we've seen an influx. But let's get real. We're talking about Haiti right now, but you could literally look around the world and replace Haiti with a lot of other countries. You know, we cannot be the landing pad for everybody that refuses to take any responsibility for their own community and actually elect people that have some integrity and hold people accountable. Haiti has been a disaster for a long time. I don't see it getting better anytime soon. The Guantanamo piece, by the way, is actually one of the first reasonable things I've heard discussed within this administration. You can take Haitians or Cubans or anybody else for that matter that have not touched U.S. soil yet. You can take them to Guantanamo. There is an immigration detention facility there, not what people remember from their Afghanistan and Iraq fiasco that was misinterpreted down there anyway. But you can take them there, and then they don't have all the same rights that they do when they touch U.S. soil. It's kind of like the whole wet foot, dry foot thing. So it is actually a really good place to take people that are interdicted at sea, you know, get them food and water until you can get them back home. But we cannot let United States be the landing pad for everybody that by definition has refused to take responsibility for their own actions in their own countries and make them better. It's the world's too big. It's not going to work. It's not sustainable.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. And that's the Cloward and Piven aspect to this, right? The whole idea, if you want a new system, is to crash the existing system. And what better way to crash it than to completely overwhelm it? And that's what they're doing. They're overwhelming the educational system, all the social services system. They're overwhelming law enforcement. There's not a single system in the United States, not a single institution that isn't affected by this massive, massive invasion by military age men. And you said we don't know what their intentions are. Not all of them, but some of them we do. We even have the video of the young man that said that he was here and we would find out why very soon, that he was going to be famous soon. And we have the other young man who was intelligent enough to tell Border Patrol that he wanted to make a bomb. So at least some of these people, they might not be bright, but they also don't have great intentions for America.
We also have, at a time where if you're from China, you can walk across the border, surrender to the first Border Patrol agent you see, within a couple of hours, get a notice to appear that's basically a legal document that lets you go anywhere in the United States, get dropped off at an NGO and get food, shelter, and a free plane ticket. But yet we have tons of Chinese waiting to be in the second wave that sneaks past Border Patrol to be picked up by other Chinese drivers and taken to Chinese stash houses. Why? I guarantee their intent isn't to make a dollar. They have something else in mind.
I guarantee you are correct. Rodney, thanks always for great insights. Stay tuned for more State of the Nation after top of the hour news with TNT.